welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 categories smart. This is Jessie Colhagen, and you're listening to The Life Note, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk, by Adele Faber and Elaine Maslisch, and summarized by Marcia Joseph. As always, we'll begin with a quote. We want to break the cycle of unhelpful talk that has been handed down from generation to generation and pass on a different legacy to our children, a way of communicating that they can use for the rest of their lives with their friends, their coworkers, their parents, their mates, and one day with children of their own. The communication gap between parents and their children can seem as wide as the Grand Canyon sometimes. In this excellent book by internationally acclaimed parent-child communication experts Adele Faber and Elaine Maslisch, you'll learn just how to bridge that gap through insights, suggestions, examples, and even some helpful cartoons that illustrate more optimal ways of communicating with your children. In this Life Note, we'll review the author's thoughts on how to help children deal with negative feelings, how to encourage more cooperation and autonomy, techniques for effective praise, alternatives to punishment, and freeing children from their limiting roles. If you're interested in having a less stressful, better relationship with your kids, this book might just be the perfect place to start. The first big thought: help children deal with feelings. Acknowledge rather than deny. Quote, "It takes practice and concentration to be able to look into and beyond what a child says in order to identify what he or she might be feeling. Yet it's important that we give our children a vocabulary for their inner reality. Once they have the words for what they're experiencing, they can begin to help themselves." End quote. As a parent, you might not realize how often you either ignore or negate the feelings that your kids are experiencing. You might think, well, I'm the parent. They should just listen to me. But did you consider that by not listening to them, you're just making it that much harder on yourself? Since children cannot always fully articulate their feelings, as parents, it's important to help them express those feelings and to acknowledge that those feelings exist and are being heard. Here's an exercise from the book for you to try. Imagine that you are a parent taking your child in for allergy shots. Afterwards, your child is bitterly complaining. The author suggests to role play with this example, suggesting that the parent says things like, "Come on, it can't hurt that much," or "You're acting like a baby." Now imagine how it would feel to hear that as a child. Keep role-playing and put yourself in the role of that child. It should become pretty obvious how having your feelings negated in this way would be pretty hurtful. Now contrast that with a more empathetic response, such as, "Sounds as if it really hurt." Imagine how that feels. Again, pretty obvious that this is a better response. By role-playing how the child feels when you negate their feelings versus acknowledging them, you begin to develop some empathy. By simply acknowledging your child's feelings, you can help them to deal more effectively with those feelings and ultimately feel less upset. To put this advice of acknowledgement into perspective, consider your own feelings as an adult when someone's not listening to or acknowledging you. Let's face it, whether you're a child or an adult, being listened to feels fantastic. And being neglected feels awful. There are specific techniques and examples of how to help kids deal with their feelings in this section of the book, so be sure to check it out for all the great advice. The next big thought: engage cooperation. Encourage helping versus resentment. Quote, "One of the built-in frustrations of parenthood is the daily struggle to get our children to behave in ways that are acceptable to us and to society. This can be maddening uphill work. Part of the problem lies in the conflict of the needs. The adult need is for some semblance of cleanliness, order, courtesy, and routine. The children couldn't care less." End quote. Do you ever feel like you're constantly battling with your kids? You're trying to get them to brush their teeth, clean up their rooms, do their homework, stop putting gum in their sister's hair, and on it goes. Perhaps it feels like an endless battle, or dare we even call it war at times? Do you feel yourself blaming, accusing, name-calling, threatening, commanding, lecturing, or warning on a daily basis? If that doesn't feel fun for you, how do you think it feels to be on the receiving end of all that? It probably doesn't feel so great for the child, and it certainly doesn't feel great for the parent. The good news is, there is a better way. The authors outline 5 skills that will engage cooperation from children rather than making them feel bad about themselves or about you. Let's use an example of when kids leave a wet towel on the bed, and we'll walk through 5 skills. 1. Describe. Describe what you see or describe the problem. Example, there's a wet towel on the bed. 2. Give information. The towel is getting my blanket wet. 3. Say it with a word. The towel. 4. Talk about your feelings. I don't like sleeping in a wet bed. 5. Write a note, possibly above the towel rack. Please put me back so I can dry. Thanks, your towel. These might seem like simple steps, but through the many examples and glowing letters shared from parents, you'll likely see the power in these techniques. Try it for yourself. It may take a bit of experimenting to find out what works best, but we're guessing that screaming and blaming is probably not working that well, so why not give this a try instead? The next big thought. Punishment is suboptimal. There is a better way. Quote, just because children aren't talking doesn't mean they aren't listening or understanding. Little children are learning every minute of every day. The question is, what are they learning? The authors suggest that punishment doesn't really work effectively. Instead, there are other alternatives that work much better. In a workshop, parents were asked to remember how they felt when they were punished. One of the responses was, quote, I remember thinking, they're so mean. I'll fix them. I'll do it again, only next time I won't get caught. End quote. These parents realized that punishment could lead to feelings such as resentment, hatred, unworthiness, and self-pity, among others. Punishment essentially distracts the child. They can become focused more on anger, pity, or feelings of revenge rather than focusing on their own behavior and learning from it. Punishment is really meant to be about learning. You want your child to learn to use better judgment and practice better behavior the next time. Given that this is the case, wouldn't it be better to focus their attention on that learning rather than have them focus on how angry they are with their parents? What are the alternatives to punishment? One way is to give kids a choice. For example, if they borrow your tools and forget to return them, you can offer this choice. Quote, you can borrow my tools and return them, or you can give up the privilege of using them. You decide. End quote. Come up with your own creative choices that you can offer your kids to change their behavior. Or better yet, brainstorm with your kids to see what solutions they have to fix the issue. They might have some creative ideas as well. By giving them a choice, and therefore some control in the matter, it seems less like punishment and more like a mutually agreed upon solution to an issue. A little mutual respect can go a long way, and we encourage you to try this strategy if it resonates with you. The next big thought, encourage autonomy. Small choices lead to happier kids. Quote, it might seem inconsequential to ask a child whether he wants a half glass of milk or a whole, his toast light or dark. But to the child, each small choice represents one more opportunity to exert some control over his own life. End quote. Parents want their kids to grow up to be self-responsible, making great choices for themselves and how they live their lives. Yet when their 5-year-old wants to wear his Superman costume to school that day, all hell breaks loose. Parents have the tricky task of trying to find the balance between control versus autonomy for their children. But we need to keep in mind how empowering autonomy can feel for a child, even in small ways. For example, one parent described how she used to have clothing fights with her 4-year-old. Then she solved this issue by adding in some choice for her child. She let her decide which of 2 outfits to wear on school days, and on non-school days, she could be free to choose whatever to wear. Problem solved. What are some ways to encourage autonomy? The authors offer these excellent techniques. Let children make choices. Show respect for a child's struggle. Don't ask too many questions. Don't rush to answer questions. Encourage children to use sources outside the home. Don't take away hope. Another idea is, quote, when possible, substitute a yes for a no, end quote. Going back to your 5-year-old Superman, could you let him make the choice, rather than wearing it to school, to wear his cape either on Saturday or Sunday instead? Or perhaps you could demonstrate respect for his struggle by saying that Superman also has to face some difficulties often, and that's why he's such a hero. Acknowledge that you realize the struggle is difficult for him. Is your child struggling with something that you can better acknowledge? Get creative with how you give your children a sense of autonomy within the boundaries that work for you as a parent. It's likely to make your life easier and to allow your child to feel much more empowered. The next big thought, a better way to praise, build self-esteem through specifics. Quote, the whole world will tell them what's wrong with them, loud and often. Our job is to tell our children what's right about them, end quote. At first thought, praise might seem like it would always be helpful coming from a parent. After all, parents want their kids to feel good about themselves and their accomplishments. Yet there can be some issues with praise, as the authors point out. For example, children might not feel that it is believable or authentic. The praise might also create some anxiety, perhaps with the child worrying about their inability to repeat the accomplishment, such as, I'll never be able to hit the ball like that again. There's a technique for praise that can be more helpful, which involves giving feedback in a specific way that once the child hears the description, he or she can then praise himself or herself. For example, if you praise a child not just for being a good boy, but rather for being generous because he let his brother play with his favorite toy, the child then learns specifically how he can repeat that generous behavior in the future. The authors say this about the process. Quote, you can take away good boy by calling him bad boy the next day, but you can't ever take away from him the time he cheered his mother with a get well card, or the time he stuck with his work and persevered even though he was very tired. These moments, when his best was affirmed, become lifelong touchstones to which a child can return to in doubt or discouragement. End quote. In other words, self-esteem increases as a result of their specific actions and accomplishments, rather than what others think of them. The final big thought, freeing children from roles, the stubborn kid, and other labels. Quote, how your parents think of you can often be communicated in seconds. When you multiply those seconds by the daily contact between parents and children, you begin to realize how powerfully young people can be influenced by the way their parents view them. End quote. In this last section, we consider the roles or labels that children get, or that we give them, and learn some techniques for freeing children from playing these particular roles. For example, one might say that her child is a picky eater, bossy, or shy. The author shares the example of her own son who didn't breathe right away when he was born, and as the nurse slapped him on the back to get him to breathe, she labeled him as a stubborn one. She found herself wondering later if her child really was stubborn, even though he was less than one day old. The problem with labeling a child a certain way is that it can then come true. Quote, all the psychology courses I had taken had warned of the dangers of the self-fulfilling prophecy. If you labeled a child as a slow learner, he could begin to see himself as a slow learner. If you saw a child as mischievous, chances are he'd start showing you just how mischievous he could be. Labeling a child was to be avoided at all costs. End quote. How can children be freed from playing certain roles? Quote, look for opportunities to show the child a new picture of himself or herself. Put children in situations where they can see themselves differently. Let children overhear you say something positive about them. Model the behavior you'd like to see. Be a storehouse for your child's special moments. And when your child acts according to the old label, state your feelings and/or your expectations. End quote. These useful tips are further explained, along with some specific case studies and examples of language that can be used with your child in certain situations. If you're interested in changing the labels that your child might have acquired, this will be very useful for you. To conclude this life note, let's remember that kids are bundles of needs, feelings, thoughts, and ideas of their very own. They need acknowledgement, and they need to be heard and understood. And just as we learn in the life book process, there's a recipe for creating certain emotional states in our lives. Kids also have their own recipes for what causes joy or frustration in their lives. And parents are pretty likely a factor here. Not being listened to is probably an ingredient in the recipe for frustration. Rather than simply imposing our commands or wishes upon them, perhaps a better way is to engage them in the process in a way that creates a better solution, or a better recipe, if you will, for both the parents and their kids. So there we have it, Faber and Maslisch's Guide to Achieving More Optimal Ways of Communicating and Connecting with Your Children. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.